Kevin Wadsworth and Patrick Karim from NorthstarBadCharts.com. Welcome to the Competent Investor, guys. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us on again, Tom. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, thanks, Tom.
The pleasure is always mine. I always enjoy talking to you guys. And I wanted to start by revisiting this idea of this massive capital rotation event that we've spoken about before. Is this, this big setup really starting to accelerate at this time?
Do you want to answer that, Pat, or shall I?
I'll let you start there.
Okay. Well, we've spoken before, and no doubt we're going to share lots of charts with the audience. But just before we do that, the capital rotation process is it's a phrase, and it's a process that we're using to describe the movement of capital in relative terms between stock markets and precious metals, particularly gold. Why have we chosen gold? Well, because in a cyclical pattern, the economic cycle can be described by that movement of capital. So risk on, risk off, if you like, times when the economy is doing great, times when the economy is not doing so great. All these background fundamentals are very clearly represented by what's going on in the movement of capital between hard assets. I'm not just talking about gold and silver, I'm talking about commodities and oil and energy, all of this kind of stuff, between hard assets and the stock market. So on a sort of a predictable basis, there is this sort of movement away from the stock markets and towards precious metals. Now, the first thing that you notice when that happens is that precious metals begin to outperform the stock market. That does not mean the stock market is going down. The stock market can still be going up. In fact, as it has been doing this year, the stock market is up something like 20%, is it? 30%, whatever the number is. The stock market is up in 2025, but gold is up probably 80% or so far in 2025. Just saw the cat walking past Pat's camera there. So gold and precious metals are outperforming the stock market. Now, why is that important? It's important because if there's other supporting evidence to go along with that, then something significant is happening. If there's other supporting evidence, for example, that gold is outperforming other stock market indices like the Russell, the Dow Jones, the NASDAQ, if gold breaks out versus money supply, if gold breaks out versus the US dollar index, so if gold is outperforming US dollar strength, all of these things, when they come together, it gives us what we call weight of evidence. So you never use just one chart. This is where people go wrong with technical analysis, Tom. They kind of pick on one chart, they pick on one indicator and say, look at this chart, look at this indicator. It means we're going up, we're going to the moon, or, we're going to have a crash. That's not how technical analysis should be done. You should gather a weight of evidence. And then what you're doing is you're weighing the probabilities of what the future may hold. The future is never 100% certain, but at times the future is fairly predictable, or more predictable than usual. And that's exactly what happened a few years ago. We started to notice gold breaking out against all those things that I mentioned. So Pat and I started to gather the evidence for a capital rotation event. So we're in a very advanced capital rotation process where clearly the precious metals and associated miners are doing great. The next sort of phase after perhaps a more significant correction for the metals, the next phase is the precious metals to outperform stock markets because the stock markets are going down. So far, stock markets haven't gone down. So the reason gold is outperforming the stock markets, it's got nothing to do with the stock markets dropping. It's all about gold and silver going up, which is fine. But the capital rotation event, not the capital rotation process, the capital rotation event is defined when the stock market reacts to that and breaks down below major support lines, below certain levels on the technical indicators. Perhaps it might fall 20, 25, 30%. And at that point, we can say the capital rotation event has happened. And in previous capital rotation events, the stock market has fallen, in the 1970s, I think it fell something like 25, 30%, and then it recovered, and then it fell something like 35 or 40%, and then it had another fall of nearly 50%. So in the 1970s, there were three major downturns in the stock market. In the early 2000s, there was two major events that took the S&P down by roughly 50% in the year 2000 and 2008, as we know. And that was a capital rotation event. The stock market went nowhere for 10 or 15 years. Gold and silver went up by hundreds, even thousands of percent. So that's how, and it also happened in the 1930s. Despite the metals being pegged, they had to be revalued higher. So there was a stock market event when the Dow collapsed in the 1930s as well. So we're identifying a stock market event approaching. All of the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle are fitting into place. And what Pat's about to show you, I think, is the S&P versus silver chart. And this helps us to answer the question that's on everybody's lips, which is, are the precious metals going to top soon? And if they do, what can we get from the technical charts looking back in history that gives us a clue as to what's going to happen next? And I think Pat's going to talk you through that because it's really critical. And this is kind of, we're looking for like a almost like the Rosetta Stone to peering into the future. And I think this S&P versus silver chart is really, really important to that.
That's right. Yes. So Kevin laid out pretty much the roadmap, and here's the evidence. You got to remember, whenever Kevin and I, you hear us talk, and everything is chart defined. We looked at evidence. We're not just saying stuff. Oh, it's gonna go to the moon because we heard something, or it's gonna crash because we heard something. We actually look at the charts. We have these huge sessions together, and we actually like, hey, look, Patrick, did you notice that there's this long 40-year line here on the gold, on the Dow versus silver chart? And look, it looks analogous to today. It seems to be rolling over. What do you make out of this? And then we look at behaviors of varying instruments while that was happening. It's everything's chart defined, and if the evidence ever changes, we will be the first ones to acknowledge that and tell you. Because the faster you can react to the ever-changing price charts, the better you are off not being a bag holder, the better you are off to go, in the assets that are just breaking out before the narratives come out. So look at this chart, guys. Here's a 1930, the crash here. That's the Dow price in silver. And I'm using silver because silver was more free-floating than gold back then. Gold was pegged, and then they had, like Kevin said, they had to revalue it. But if you put the oil chart or silver chart, here it is, you'll see that there's, well, look at all this granularity. It was traded. People were trading the silver chart. And you'll see here, as the Dow, even here in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, even if the Dow is going up versus silver, it doesn't mean silver was going down back then. Silver was actually going up heading into 1968. The Dow was actually also going up heading into 1965, 1966, the late mid to late 1960s. So they were both, everything was going up together. And the Dow was kept up outperforming silver. But when the Dow started underperforming silver right here and started topping out years before we had the super CRE, right? This is like a 40-year trend line. The Dow now started showing weakness versus silver. Hold on, both instruments are going up, but the Dow is not able to outperform silver as fast as it could before. That's warning sign number one. And I'll remind you guys, I don't have it on this chart here. I'll put it for you guys. The US 10-year yield. And this is a key macro element. And people that don't look at long-term charts, they'll never see this. Here's the yields. I'm gonna double-click here just to show you guys. The yields. What people don't know is in the early 1900s, the yields were actually going down a little bit, like the cycle we've had since the 1980s. They were going down, 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 down. Look at that. They're bottoming in the late 40s, 50s. And now look, they're starting to turn up. This is the same environment that we're starting to carve out right now. So the yields are starting to turn up. The destruction of purchasing power, putting a floor under the stock market, under silver, under gold, under a whole bunch of commodities. But too much of that destruction of purchasing power, and eventually, whatever it is, the price to earning ratios, all that stuff, it's putting a cap on the stock market. It's not able to outperform silver as much anymore or gold. And that's the first step of weakness. The second step is to see the Dow. Here's a Dow chart, guys, actually falter. So we could zoom in today there to see what happens. But until we start losing some rising support lines like we did back in the late 1960s, then the stock market, it still's got some steam into it. But because look at this today, guys, look at this today. Here's a little analog tool I use, a measured tool. I'm bringing it over to today. It's practically the same pattern, some type of complex head and shoulders, left shoulder, the head, right shoulder, but after that, creating, stretching out. We're right at that line, guys. We're right now, we're testing this long-term line that started in 1980s. I don't know, if I guess it, we're very close to 1968, where silver had a strong move up. Silver had a strong move up here, and then after that, we had this important correction coming up. Look, I don't know how long this transition period is going to be. We could either compress it. It could be silver might correct hard, might not correct as hard. We'll have to wait and see. But it's what's below that line that really interests me. And Kevin, this is the super CRE stuff, because we know below that line is when the stock markets fall apart versus silver versus gold. They fall apart. They haven't fallen apart yet. They're starting to fall apart, but not to that extent. Not here. We see we've just had this falling apart from the 2018, 2023 peaks. We're starting to move down here. People, they look close. Ah, look, stock market's falling apart versus silver, gold. That's nothing compared to what's going to happen below that line.
So
And that's what's happening.
the evidence suggests that at some point in the not too distant future, based on all of the other evidence that we have, is that the chart will go below that super CRE line, and that will be as a result of silver massively outperforming the stock markets, and when it breaks below that line, silver itself going into a massive bull run, outperforming gold, outperforming pretty much everything. In fact, there'll be miners that will probably outperform silver, but silver will have a highly likely, a sort of period where it moves up many hundreds of percent, and that is the main part of the silver bull era. We haven't seen that. If we get anywhere near 70, 80, even $100 in the next few weeks, that is not the major part of this silver bull era. What you need to do now, based on that chart that Patrick just showed you, is to identify downside support, and in my view, that could be somewhere between $40 and $45, that kind of area, and identify or identify yourself as whether you're a trader or an investor or a stacker, because this is something else that people always confuse when we talk about corrections and pullbacks. How you react to the knowledge that let's say a 30 or 40% correction is going to happen. How you react to that depends on your time frame. It doesn't mean you have to sell. It doesn't mean you have to sell all of your silver. You might choose to hold your position and just keep stacking, take advantage when silver is back down near $40 or so. If you're trading it, it is very, very different, because when you enter a trade, you already know the point at which you're going to sell and the point at which you're going to take profits before you enter the trade, right? So if you don't, you're not doing it right. So if you're a trader and you're looking at a more short-term time horizon, you must know what your target is, your profit limit, where you're going to sell, and you must know where your stop loss is so that you can exit the trade and protect your NAV, your net asset value, your portfolio. So please, identify in your own mind, are you a trader? And sort of medium to long-term investor, or are you a stacker? Because a stacker will never sell. A stacker will just keep adding and keep adding for their entire lifetime. Bull market, bear market, they don't care. So, identify which one of those, or a mixture of those, that you happen to be.
That's critical, Kevin.
It's interesting to
Honestly.
look. It's interesting to look at this stuff as well as a ratio chart, because if you're only focused on silver or you're only focused on the stock market, then you're going to miss this type of comparison that you guys are
Yes,
showing.
yes, yes, yes. And this is why Bitcoiners and crypto fans have got it wrong this year. And it's why we traded Bitcoin very successfully, but we did not have a long-term position because we knew about the CRE evidence. So our long-term positions, and I posted them on X today, are in the precious metal sector in 2025, and they're up over 100%. So knowing the ratio charts and knowing how the ratio charts are performing is critical. Why were we long precious metals and not Bitcoin? The answer is because Bitcoin broke down versus gold and silver. So why would you hold, even if you love Bitcoin and even if you believe in Bitcoin and all the rest of it, why do you want to hold an asset that is underperforming? If you're of the mindset that you want to have lots and lots of Bitcoin, then for crying out loud, sell your Bitcoin when gold is in a bull market versus Bitcoin. Some horizontal support there as well. So if Bitcoin's to avoid falling all the way down to, I don't know, 30, 40,000, something like that, like it usually does in a bear market, and it falls 70 or 80%. If Bitcoin is going to avoid that, then it needs to hold at this level that it's at now versus gold. And it may do, but for the entirety of 2025, gold has outperformed Bitcoin. And on the weekly time frame, which is what we tend to look at Bitcoin on, that was very, very obvious that that was going to be the case. And along with the capital rotation evidence, it was pretty clear that was going to be the case, because Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies trade much more with stock markets and tech stocks than they do with gold and silver. And you get all these narratives thrown out there, but at the end of the day, and until or unless Bitcoin starts to have a correlation with gold, then you can forget any ideas about Bitcoin being digital gold, because it's not behaving in the same way that gold does in a risk-off environment. If times are troubling and there's risk in the air, the last thing you want is for your asset to plunge 80, 90%. That's not, that doesn't sound like a currency, and it doesn't sound like something that I want to hold during a bear market either. I'm sorry if I'm not going to be appealing to, the crypto audience, but it's just logical to me to not hold an underperforming asset.
Right. This is the correlation, the trend correlation with the on the monthly chart for the Nasdaq, and I think the Nasdaq 3x, it's even more highly correlated with Bitcoin.
It is,
So
yeah, it's
anything
one of the
here
two.
above whatever dot seven, so after like this maturity of the Bitcoin, no, it's exponential growth slowing down. Look, since 2020, since maybe when since the financialization of it has like gone bonkers, like ETFs, all that stuff. Look at the correlation there. It's still the trend correlation is much higher. It's you know it's statistically
It was
significant.
also highly predictable, because all those ETF, everyone was saying Bitcoin's going to go to 500,000 or whatever because of the ETFs, and same for Ethereum. But for crying out loud, stop and think for a moment. Gold, you can have gold ETFs. It doesn't stop gold going up and down. It doesn't stop bear markets in gold just because you've got ETFs. It doesn't drive forever demand. That's the side of Bitcoin that people seem to sort of disregard. Why has it gone from 126,000 to 86,000? Why has it fallen $40,000? Well, because of a drop in demand, because people are selling the damn thing. It's no different to any other assets, no different to Ethereum or Litecoin or bananas. The price goes up and down because of the supply demand equation. And we know about the fixed supply for Bitcoin. So when demand drops significantly, the price will drop significantly. It's just, I just don't get why people can't see that. And as Pat just said, as Bitcoin has matured, it has settled into a correlation with the stock markets. It has not settled into a correlation with gold. So if we're heading into a capital rotation event and a capital rotation process that favors gold, and so far it has done exactly as we'd expected, then what do you want to be holding? Gold, or do you want to be holding Bitcoin? If Bitcoin doesn't correlate with gold and gold is going up, then what are you doing? Kind of thing. That, and I know people, the first correction for gold that comes along, and if silver goes from 60 to 40, the crypto crowd are going to come out and say, "Ah, I told you so." No, that's not the case, because there is now enough room in the chart for Bitcoin to outperform gold and still be in bearish territory.
Pat, I was wondering if you could do the correlation chart of Bitcoin versus gold while I ask Kevin about this idea. You mentioned this thought about not being wedded to Bitcoin just based on always being bullish, let's say, about taking and making sure that you're, let's say, holding that asset responsibly while not being completely married to it and rotating in and out of it to benefit yourself. I think that is actually really important when we think about gold and silver as well. If you're taking trading positions on it, then you should be rotating in and out of it. But if you're infinitely bullish on it, that doesn't help either, because there are going to be times where we are going to want to sell gold and silver, especially the trading positions, if not your physical. Gary Savage and I talked about that last week. about this idea of when he sees the let's say his target top, that he's going to actually be selling his physical as well and buying undervalued stocks. Because at when we get these capital rotation events, at this time it's favoring gold and silver, not necessarily Bitcoin or stocks, but there is going to be a time when you're going to want to rotate out of metals and back into, let's say, stocks and maybe Bitcoin as well. And just
100%. You're absolutely right there. And you have the only way you can do that is by eliminating your bias. And the only way to eliminate bias is to not follow narratives, not follow what's on social media, don't follow even fundamentals, because the fundamentals, and I can't stress this enough, the fundamentals are laid out for you on the price chart. Everything you know about the fundamentals and everything you don't know about the fundamentals, stuff that only insiders might know, and bullion banks or whatever, it's priced into the chart. Respect the chart, respect what it's telling you, and learn how to understand it. If gold begins to underperform the stock market and the rotation, or no, not if, when gold and silver start to rotate and underperform the stock market on the higher time frame charts, the monthly charts, and they fall below key support lines, the moving averages, the Ichimoku cloud, these technical indicators that we use, in exactly the same way that we've turned bullish for precious metals, we will turn bearish for precious metals and flip the other way around, with the bullishness moving towards stock markets and risk on assets, whatever it happens to be, whatever happens to be the flavor of the day at the time. So in this environment that we're in at the moment, and I mentioned oil and energy, it doesn't mean that oil and energy and all of the commodities are going to go up together at the same time by hundreds or thousands of percent. What it means that in this era that we're in, that we're transitioning into, particularly once we've had the stock market major correction as a confirmation of the capital rotation event, once that's happened and we're already in this environment now, then we can expect the commodities to take turns in outperforming gold. So from this point onwards, and in fact from a couple of years ago onwards, we should be pricing everything in gold because we know that gold is beating the dollar. So if we know that gold is beating the dollar, in other words, gold has been, getting to be worth more dollars, then whatever you're wanting to buy, whatever asset you're wanting to buy, needs to be outperforming gold. Because if it's not, just buy gold. And you don't have to buy physical gold, you can buy digital gold. There are companies out there, all sorts of companies that allow you to buy physical gold in a digital way, and they store the gold in a vault for you. So you can do it very easily in seconds online, buying digital gold and being able to transition between gold and other commodities is really important. You can sell your gold, cash it in, and then move into, well, it could be cryptocurrencies, or it could be, let's say, uranium miners, or it could be lithium miners, or it could be copper miners, actually, is one we've got an eye on in the oil sector. So being able to recognize that and play those big trends, and also perhaps keep some of your trading to a minimum as well, Tom, because the more trading you do, probably the more sort of fees you build up, and the more complicated and time-consuming and stressful it becomes. So, if you're not an expert, choose maybe, I don't know, half a dozen companies, choose some core positions, some long-term positions, and you don't need to be trading in and out, every week, even every month. Just react to the long-term signals. And play the long game. And if you've done that with, let's say, Cameco, as we've done, with our website members, you can, I think it's up over 400% at the moment. So you play that long, that's from 2019 to now, it's up over 400%. Gold and silver up over 100% over the last 18 months or so. So you can play those long-term trends, and you can watch your portfolio just gradually building and building and building and massively outperforming inflation. You don't have to always go for the big wins. I think people just, they're sort of chasing these 100% in a couple of weeks, and it's, if you're trying to do that, I think you're going to end up losing a lot of money.
Well, Pat, the reason I had asked you about that correlation chart is just because I had heard a podcast a while ago that was talking about, rotating in and out of gold, basically rotating out of gold into Bitcoin and vice versa. And that would mean that we'd have a perfect negative correlation. So showing that we don't have a perfectly negative correlation when one is outperforming, the other one is going down, and again, vice versa, that isn't what this correlation chart is showing us, right?
No, so this is what you gotta go back to that first chart I showed you back in the late 50s and all the way to the late 60s. Everything was going up together, right? You could maybe call it an everything bubble. So the trend correlations, they could be in harmony at certain times. They could be separate, but you can't trade, even if you have an inverse correlation, or even if you have both have a positive correlation, not perfect but positive. You won't know which one to choose. I would not choose based off that. I would do a ratio chart of the actual two instruments you want to trade, and that will reflect more reality. So for Bitcoin, if you want to swap Bitcoin, when you lost that rising support line, it was probably a time to go maybe, I don't know, 50-50, 50% Bitcoin. 50, let's say I'm forcing you with a gun to your head to choose Bitcoin or gold. I would probably choose 50-50 here. But as soon as you started losing more important support lines, and like Kevin mentioned, maybe the weekly chart and all that, it's falling apart more. You probably go 100% gold. The only time you're going to swap back into Bitcoin would be once you undo all this damage. Once the distance from that red line, the 36-month moving average, you close back above here, then you say, okay, Bitcoin's gaining some steam again. Once you close above 37 ounces of gold to buy one Bitcoin, once you go back above that, let's say this line, instead of going down, it goes back up, it bounces here on the line, and then it decides to go back up. Then you go long Bitcoin here, somewhere here, maybe above this line. Maybe there'll be a slightly descending line that's going to move into existence. But that's when you swap back into Bitcoin. So whoever's telling you to swap back into Bitcoin now, they're hoping that this is a bottom and it will be the definite bottom. But you just don't know. With hindsight, we'll know if this is a bottom. So you got right now, you're agnostic. It's going sideways. It's starting to trend downwards on the monthly chart. It's 100% trending downwards on the weekly chart. So if it bounces here and goes back up here somewhere, then you're above the cloud. You're back. The moving averages are coiling. You can't say that you should swap back into Bitcoin. That's praying and hoping that it ultimately resolves upward. It could take time. There's opportunity costs, But here you're vulnerable. You're below both moving averages. The bias is for now that you'll have some type of back test here and it should keep trending downwards, right? Or at least retest that, the cloud. And then if it busts below, I don't know if it's that support here, or I don't know where there's a congestion area here. If ever you go back below those two lines, if Bitcoin is worth less than 20 ounces of gold to buy one Bitcoin, then it's total meltdown, one versus the other. So you shouldn't anticipate that you're going to go down probably the ratio to 10 to 1. So you'll get. If you're holding gold on the way down, you'll be able to buy twice as many bitcoins later on. So I don't know how people could be bullish Bitcoin instead of gold right now. It just doesn't make sense. The charts aren't supporting that. I think they're grasping at, they're trying to call a bottom. Will it be the bottom? With hindsight, we'll know. But you know how it is with bottom callers or top callers, right? It could take a while, right? They keep moving the target. Oh, it's a bottom. It bounces. It goes back down. Oh, that was the bottom. Look, people, what they should say, they said, look, it's a possible bottom. Only with hindsight, once it breaks to the upside, then that's why we never trade the bottoms there. You never go along at a bottom. You exit your shorts that you entered from much higher. If you think it's a possible bottom, then you could exit your shorts into weakness, but you don't go long here. You have to wait until there's way more evidence. Then you go long after the price has moved up substantially, and then you have a beautiful pattern with upwards momentum. That's when you go long. And the inverse, you exit your longs. If you want to exit the strength at possible tops, you could exit some of your longs, right? Scale out a little bit. And then after that, you only go short. You never go short an uptrend. You only go short once you have a topping pattern, and then it falls apart. That could, for gold, silver, and the miners, that could be like far, 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 far in the future.
Kevin, you're muted.
I've got a dog in the house, so I tend to mute it sometimes. Otherwise, I get Spud barking in the background. Yeah, I mean, what Pat's talking about there is kind of the price that you pay for having a better success rate, because there's, by buying the breakout, you've got ev evidence, you've got actual evidence. You know, if you're going to take medicine because you've got an illness, you know, you want to make sure you're taking the right medicine. So you go to the doctors and he gives you the evidence that you're actually suffering from the illness that you think you're suffering from. Otherwise, you'd be taking entirely the wrong medicine and it might make you worse. So the doctor's not going to act without evidence. And you shouldn't either, because the consequences on your financial health are potentially just as bad on your physical health if you get it wrong. So I personally, and I think this is sound advice, I'm not a financial advisor, but I personally think that it's right to act based on a weight of evidence and accept that you're not going to catch the bottom. And then to exit into strength is the hardest thing in the world to do. Really, really difficult. You know, we could have been exiting into strength with silver for, well, ever since it's all got to sort of $35, $40. I mean, it's been moving, you know, very, very strongly. And then, of course, it broke out through the sort of 55 barrier last week. So there's a lot of strength in silver at the moment. And this is where, you know, sort of scaling out gradually comes into things, because you don't, it's not an all or, it's not necessarily an all or nothing thing. When you decide that you want to exit into strength, as Pat's already sort of hinted at, you can, nothing to stop you exiting in tranches, so that you leave a little bit in just in case silver does go to $200 without stopping.
Yeah, and there's nothing that prohibits you from going back in, scaling back in. You know, let's say you start taking profits because it's failing on the short time frames. You still have your core position, but let's say that it doesn't fall apart and you never get tricked out of your core position, and it starts turning back up there a month later, 2 months later, whenever it be. You could jump back in. You know, there's no grudge. I've never heard silver call you up, hey, you're not allowed to buy me there. I'm mad at you because you sold out there before. Like, what is that?
Well, Kevin, to your point about the weight of evidence, how many boxes of your guys's capital rotation event chart have been checked at this point?
I'll
I
share that
think
with
that's
you.
a great way to kind of visualize this weight of evidence that you're talking about.
I'll share my screen with you. Let me just make sure I don't. I'll just move a couple of things. I've got three screens here, so I'm surrounded by charts all day long, Tom. So I'll just make sure I've got the right screen share on. Okay, there we go. So that's the Bitcoin Gold chart. Let me just pull up what you're talking about, which is this. And I posted this. I'll just go back, actually. I posted this on X back in October of 2024, and I'm really happy that it's got as many views as it has done now, because I think
Wow.
when I posted this back in, well, just over a year ago, I think there's a lot of skepticism around this, but it's obviously getting shared around a lot more, because people are sort of saying, well, hang on a minute, this guy might be right. This might be the explanation for what's happening. So as I said earlier, gold is putting money supply into a bear market. Gold has put DXY into a, so if you measure these things in gold, they're all in a bear market. The US dollar index isn't able to outperform gold strength. Consumer prices, producer prices, currency in circulation, equal weighted S&P, the New York Composite, the Dow Jones, the Wilshire, and the Russell as well. So the last two green boxes are the S&P and the Nasdaq. So I can take a look at that for you. Just as a reminder, the last capital rotation events in favor of gold, because of course the rotations happen the other way as well, from gold towards stock markets. But the last capital rotation dates that relate to capital rotations towards gold were in 1930, roughly 1972, and roughly 2002. And in all of those cases, the stock market sort of crashed and then didn't make new highs for over a decade. And in all of those cases, gold and silver went bonkers. So that's what the text at the bottom there, for those of you watching this recording, you can pause it and read that text, but that's what that means. So the gold and the S&P, sorry, the S&P and Nasdaq versus gold are the two that we are waiting to turn red. So let's just take a look at those two. Let me have a look at the ratio chart. So let's take a look at the S&P versus gold and see if it's broken down in any way. Let me just tell you what, I'll just change the layout so that I've got some drawings on here for you. And I'll just have to go back to S&P versus gold. Just bear with me a moment. There we go. Okay, and I'll zoom out on the monthly time frame. So this is the S&P versus gold. And for us to say that the S&P is in a bear market versus gold, you have to define what you mean by a bear market versus gold. So the green line there is what you would consider perhaps the most important moving average. It's the 4-year moving average, because historically speaking, either the 3 or 4 year moving average, when you're below it, and you can see back in 2001 here, the chart moved below it, we were then falling into a bear market. And the other thing is this red and green splotch here, it's the Ichimoku cloud. And you can see, well, you can imagine where the Ichimoku cloud, unfortunately, on this chart, it doesn't quite go back far enough. But maybe if I choose a different SPX data stream, I'm just wondering why. Just choose that and do XAUUSD. Okay, and that might get a longer day. There we go. Okay, so you can see that we fell below the moving average and below the Ichimoku cloud there. So that put the S&P into a massive bear market priced in gold. And you can go back to the previous example before that in the 1970s. You can see how the chart moving below the moving average, below the cloud, and below the support line put us into a new era where gold massively outperformed the stock market. And all the way back in the 1930s, the same thing. The chart broke below the moving average, below the cloud, and we're in a massive bear market for the stock market, and got, the precious metals went bonkers. So applying the same logic to what's happening today, we had a CRE back in 2011 where we flipped into stock markets and out of precious metals. And the recovery, incidentally, has not taken us back to where we were 25 years ago. So currently, the stock market, and if we use the S&P as a proxy for the stock market, is down 70% from when it peaked, and it peaked 25 years ago. Okay, and not only that, but I think it's probably fair to say, depending on how you define it, that we are, I've been holding off turning that box red, but it's probably fair to say that we're in a bear market now for the stock market versus gold. Perhaps it might just be worth waiting for us to fall below this red pivot line where there's some significant support and resistance, because I suspect we're going to bounce here. I suspect the stock market isn't going to roll over just yet, and I suspect the precious metals are likely to correct. So for those reasons, I probably can turn those boxes red, but the capital rotation event hasn't happened yet. So that's the S&P versus gold. And if we look at NASDAQ versus gold, it's much the same sort of thing. Got it down here somewhere, I think. I'll just type it in. Let's have a look. NDX, NASDAQ, and XAU, USD. Scroll down, hit return. Okay, so this is NASDAQ versus gold. And the last rotation event, as I said, is in the early 2000s. Again, the ratio chart moved below the moving average, below the Ichimoku cloud, and tricky to know exactly where the support line was on that. You could probably draw a support line in there somewhere, perhaps. Something like that, maybe. And that's a topping pattern, and then it broke down. So moving forward to where we are now, are we in a bear market for the NASDAQ versus gold? Well, we're below the moving average. We're below the Ichimoku cloud. We're not quite below critical support yet. I would probably say that that pivot line is quite important as well. So I'm probably going to hold off colouring those boxes in red, even though we are arguably in a bear market now for the stock market versus gold. And it has been really since February of 2024. We're down 30% since then, and since the stock market peaked versus gold 25 years ago, the Nasdaq is down 60% or more. So gold has shown incredible strength despite this recent 10-year rally. The Nasdaq and tech stocks have not reached the previous prices in gold. So that's your answer. Those boxes there, I could probably turn them sort of a pinkish color, shall we say, almost red, but not quite. But it depends on how you define it. But I think you get the idea. I think you get the idea of how the evidence stacks up, and how we are transitioning into that gold bull era.
We have this discussion about biases and checking where the evidence leads. Kevin or Pat, I think you had this recent idea about your Uber driver asking you about buying silver. And I had an experience on the weekend here as well of being at a friend's birthday and somebody asking me about gold and silver miners. And this guy said he knew nothing about investing, and he said that, you know, they're really starting to outperform. And again, his admission was that he didn't really know anything about investing. So is that, you know, can those be signs of, you know, maybe starting to need caution here? And we can kind of tie into that what you guys see as this, let's say the short-term path forward for gold and silver with a possible pullback here.
Yeah. Well, hi Mark, if ever you watch this there, it's like, it's just it's a cliche in the trading world. We always know like tips are for waiters, right? So if your waiter is coming or you're giving a tip to your waiter or he's giving you a tip on the asset allocation, say, oh, okay. And we're like down the, or your grandma, like, you know what we should do? We should maybe make a poll so people to rank in order of importance, depending on who tells you. If it's good investment, it has more weight, right? Like the Uber driver, the waiter, the barber, like who's more important in the ladder of this? But I like Peter Spina there, he commented on my post on X as Patrick, hold on. He's asking you if it's time to buy silver. He's not telling you to buy silver. So maybe that's like even a higher level of to be worried when the waiter or whoever it is telling you, hey guys, I need a bunch of money already. You gotta buy silver. Maybe that's like you know, but it's all fun. It's all fun, you know. Those are symptoms you will see, but you might the price could still go up, and you'll still get those comments like more and more and more, I guess there. So you can't trade off that there. It's just you price rising will have those comments come up more and more, right? Because if when price goes up, people are happy about it. They'll talk about it, and then CNBC or somebody will cover about it. You know, they're not going to cover an asset that's doing nothing. They're going to cover an asset that has given wealth to certain people. And of course now it creates awareness, but I don't know. I can't in a vacuum there. It's just fun stuff, you know, it's anecdotal, it's cool stuff. We'll see in the charts anyways when that it, you know, the day before the monthly chart on silver chart starts rolling over, we're gonna see it on the daily, then we're gonna see it on the weekly. So there's no but yeah, there's nothing material to take out of it, but it is fun there to have these stories, right? It's like on the Barron's newsletter or something, the Barron's magazine, the death of US equities. Like they put that in 1981 or 1982, and that was like the beginning of the bull market.
There was a the
Yeah.
recent one was the death of inflation, remember?
Oh goodness, yes. Yeah.
That is no, that damn thing's never gonna die, Tom.
Yeah, I think that was about 5 or 6 years ago here.
Yeah,
Yeah, even the yeah,
inflation's dead,
go.
my ass.
Well, yeah, inflation is not dead. And he asked me also, my Uber driver, he said, where do you think we are? Are we like a 2008 type of place? But because we look at long-term charts, I said, no, I think we're more like 1968 right now, you know, where the 10-year yields have bottom, multi-decade bottom, they're starting to turn up. It's like
Were you
we're
saying this to your Uber driver? Because I can imagine him sat there going, oh, 19, what happened in 1968? The yield. I can just
No,
imagine that conversation, how it went.
nobody knows Kevin about that, you know, unless you're an old, like you're 70 years old there or 80 there. Nobody, unless you're looking at charts there, those charts, you'll never see them on Yahoo.
Well,
You'll never
the funniest thing that somebody said to me just in the last couple of days was a crypto account with about 500,000 followers came back to me, and I'd posted charts about this capital rotation event and so on and Bitcoin. He said you need to zoom out, and he was showing me a chart of Bitcoin over the last sort of 10 years. And I said my simple answer was zoom out further. You need to zoom out 100 years because Bitcoin hasn't existed long enough to even know what a capital rotation event is. And he's like, oh, what? You know, if you're not zooming out through all known economic history, then you're automatically depriving yourself of evidence. You know, you're looking through a microscope when you should be looking through a telescope.
And all this matters.
You know, you start with the big picture, And then you build the finer detail. You start with the
Yes.
forest and you work down to the trees. So if you're looking at a stock, an individual stock, you look at the whole economic environment, then you look at the sector and how it's affected by that economic environment, and then you compare that stock to the sector. So if I was looking at, let's say, First Majestic, first thing I want to know is, are we in an environment that favors precious metals? We are, right, tick, next piece of evidence. So I'm thinking about First Majestic. Is it outperforming gold? It is. Tick, right? Okay, it's doing better than gold. Then I'll do a ratio chart, First Majestic versus silver. Is it outperforming silver? No. Right. I'm going to stay with silver. Wait until First Majestic breaks out versus silver, and then you're in the fastest horse in the race. So that's how you do it. You start from the forest and you work down to the tree. So I just hope, people can take that away and look at the big picture first. And when I say big picture, I mean the biggest picture you can possibly look at.
So when we are kind of, let's say, zooming in a little bit from the entire forest, guys, what is the gold to silver ratio telling you? And do you guys look at signals within that chart to rotate from one to the other?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, as with any ratio, playing that ratio can be a big advantage. So when the gold silver ratio breaks down, I don't know if Pat's got the chart there, he might pull it up, but the gold silver ratio has moved down, as you would expect, quite a lot over the last several weeks and has broken down below some important support. But it's the signal at the end of the month that very often matters with these long-term charts. So what the chart does on a daily or even a weekly basis doesn't necessarily tell you where it's going to be going in the longer term. Is that a monthly chart you've got there, Pat? I mean, when you get these monthly breakdowns, then it's sending a more important signal. We may be heading for a little back test here. The chart can go up and back test that breakdown, meaning that gold outperforms silver for a little while as they correct a little bit. But that clear support level is now given way. And that this is where technical analysis is brilliant, in my view, because it sends a signal that you can act upon. If you're talking about fundamentals and you talk about narratives, they're kind of wishy-washy, mushy things that kind of are hard to know when you need to act on them. Whether it's cryptocurrencies and ETFs, or whether it's money supply going to the moon. That there was a big narrative about USM2 going vertical, therefore Bitcoin's got to go vertical. Well, it's done the opposite. M2's gone vertically upwards, and Bitcoin's been going the opposite direction. So it's all about timing, and technical charts give you that timing. When a support line is broken, it's sending a signal on a particular time frame, whether it's the daily time frame that you're looking at, or the weekly, or the monthly, or the long-term quarterly chart. So you can play those signals on those time frames to your advantage. And in this case, knowing that silver is outperforming gold to such an extent that it's broken a support line there, then that's useful information that you can act upon.
So I want to go back to this idea of what you guys might be seeing again in the kind of shorter to midterm here. Are we going to see a correction in gold and silver?
Highly probable. Yeah,
Yes.
but what we do know is that both gold and silver are in a bull market. So we can look at downside support levels. We can look at how stretched gold and silver are in historic terms. When I say stretched, I mean the distance from the moving average, the long-term moving average. So you can use a 3-year moving average, for example, and you can go all the way back to the 1970s, and you can see, when gold peaks and when silver peaks, just how far stretched they are from their moving average. It gives you an idea of that particular asset, how far it's capable of moving in very bullish environments. So, and also you can look at what Pat's doing now, which is comparing the percentage move that we've just seen with previous percentage moves in gold bull markets. The conclusion has to be, as much as people want to say that this time is different, and silver is going to 100 without a pullback, and if silver is going to 200 without a pullback or whatever, the conclusion has to be that we've now seen a move that's comparable to the one of the major moves in the last bull market, and also the one before that in the 1970s as well. It very closely replicates the first sort of major move, if you like, for silver in the 1970s, and it's quite close to the to the second move there as well. So What I will say as a caveat is that silver and gold are only now just breaking out versus the stock market. So for that reason, I think it's fair to say that gold and silver have a very long way to go in a precious metals bull era from where they are at the moment. But we may be close to exhaustion in terms of the near term. And that's why you need to look at downside support levels, maybe near $40. The $50 area, $48, $50 area is very important support, of course. And we've been broken above that. We've broken above a long-term support level around 55 as well. So what I was hoping for and still think is possible is that silver can move up to $70, $80 and then back test the support level in the, I don't know, in the 50, 55 area. And that would do it, and then off you go to $100 or $200. There's two or three sort of major scenarios that are probable, or pot sorry, two or three scenarios that are entirely sort of plausible. What you do is the price is moving, you continually assess which of those scenarios is being followed, or which of those scenarios is the one that's most likely to unfold. At the moment, we're just long gold and we're long silver, in terms of the long-term picture. If you're trading, you don't want to be entering at this point because we're very stretched. Gold, silver has already had a massive move. It's not a low risk trading entry point. In order to get that, you need what Pat's just drawing there, which is a significant correction pullback, to sort of identify a low risk entry point for a trade. And you'd also need that distance from moving average to cool off as well and reset, allowing the moving average to catch up. So it's not a low risk entry point for trading because you may very well not reach your profit limit. Remember, when you're trading, you have to know your stop loss, you have to know your profit limit, your target. You don't just take a position and then shrug your shoulders and sort of decide later when to exit. That's not how trading works. So
Is
be very clear about that.
that part of your risk management strategy, Kev? Is this idea that you're kind of setting the parameters for your trade before you actually pull the trigger and enter it?
Absolutely, 100% that is the case. Yeah, so our long positions are determined by a set of rules in our Trend Navigator system, and that has an inbuilt risk and money management protocol so that if the price falls below the 12 period moving average, you're out and your risk has been managed by the NAV risk that you took at the start. This that Pat's showing you here is a sort of traditional risk and money management calculation where you put your stop loss and your profit limit, that's the bottom line and the top line, in place. And then from your entry point, you can work out what your reward to risk is. The reward being the green bit there, and the risk is the blue bit. If you get to the bottom of the blue bit, you're out and you've lost a small percentage. And if you go to the top of the green bit, you're also out, but with profits, and you add your profits to your NAV. You would maybe take a 2% NAV risk on a trade, or a 1% NAV risk, or even a 0.5% NAV risk. So if you've got $100,000, you might risk 1,000. And by that I mean, if you get stopped out and you hit the bottom of that blue zone, you lose $1,000 of your 100,000. But if you go to the green zone there, I can't see the numbers, but if it's a 3-to-1 reward to risk, then you'll win
Four
the
to one. Yeah.
$3,000, and the $3,000 goes back into your NAV, and you've got 103,000 to play with.
That's right. See, this is a setup for silver for the next consolidation. There is going to be the move that brings you the triple digit silver there, and like rather easily if you get that reset there in momentum. If you get that flag here, it's that's when you get the next move after that. Sometimes it's weird. I tell people, if I'm on the, this is like you have people that are in the trade and there's people that are not on the trade, and they both have different answers. If somebody's already in the trade that entered much lower, where the cluster of evidence told them to go in, they're in the trade, they're gonna look at the chart, and they're gonna when they listen to us, they should listen for the word, not low risk entry or stuff like that. They should listen: are we still in an uptrend? As soon as we say, like Kevin says, oh, we're still in an uptrend, people who entered much lower, they could keep riding it. If they're doing trend analysis, they're good based on the trends. if somebody's on the sidelines, and a lot of people, because they're hearing their Uber drivers tell them about silver, their grandma, their friends, everybody, I made money. I'm going to tell everybody at the party I made money in silver. Then they come to our website, or they come on Twitter. And then what they want to hear is it a low-risk entry? That's what they should be listening to, not if it's still an uptrend. Because people think because it's an uptrend, all entries in that uptrend are equivalent in quality. And that's not true. As price moves, the risk profile of that entry is 100% different than if you enter properly. And it kind of annoys people because they want to jump in on the train. They want the sharpest profits. But we're there saying, no, I'm sorry. Entering here when you're stretched is not the same as entering back in 2024 or entering back in 2020. It's just materially, objectively, not the same. So if you're that person on the sidelines and you're frustrated because your friend made all that money, and we're there, Northstar Bat Charts, and we're telling you, look, we're in an uptrend, but that does not mean we're bearish 100%, where it's an uptrend. But that does not give you the right, or does not give you the opportunity, the same one that your friend had a year ago or 2 years ago, whenever the breakout was. That's a critical nuance. And the most backlash I get on Twitter or anywhere, it's people, they just don't understand that difference, that being bullish does not mean you jump in on that train at every single time. You actually have to wait for the train to slow down, a consolidation, and then you get in. Nice. You don't have to rush. You're not going to get run over by the train. You go in with your luggage. And then after that, on the breakout, then you go in. You don't try to, it's not true you jump on a flying train there. The flying train's going to smash you, man. You can't get on. Super dangerous. So that's for me, and that means, okay, I want to circle back. The next low risk entry for silver might be at $58, $60, and I'm going to rather that entry than entering now. Let's say the price was 53, 50, like 57, 56. I rather enter. I don't care where the price is. It's where the price is. How is that structure? How is the price consolidated? How has the FOMO evaporated? How have the people that needed to take profits took their profits and they're out of the picture? When all those sellers are gone, that's when I want to enter, no matter what the price is. If this consolidation happens up here, and Patrick, and I enter at 75, I'm going to be way happier to enter at 75 than entering at 57. What are you talking about, Pat? You're talking nonsense. Yes, I would be happier entering much higher than entering here because I could anchor my sell stop. I could have less chances of going down. I have more chances of price exploding fast in the shortest amount of time. Those chances are after consolidation. Never, 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 never before. I'll show you this chart that I put on Twitter. Let me scroll down. Do-do-do-do. And this is critical here, this one here. Silver's best moves come after important corrections. Say that 10 times. Silver's best moves. Show me a crazy silver move when it did not do a correction. It doesn't exist. It does not exist. You need important correction, explosive move. Correction, explosive move. It's over and over. The 70s, multi-year, decade long, couple of years. So look at that chart. Tell me where's your correction? Tell me, guys. I dare you. There is no correction. We haven't had a correction since 2024. We haven't had one on the monthly chart. So it just, you might feel the FOMO. You might be pissed off because your friend made all that money. Well, at least he got in when the price was starting to break out. I know. I don't want to upset people. People, 100% of the comments on the YouTube channel, they're going to go crazy, Tom. But what do you want me to tell you? Until we get some type of correction, whether it's 1 year, whether it's 6 months, like something, it's you can't do anything here. You just, if you're on the sidelines, you cannot do anything right now. It's just, you can't. There's nothing to do here. You just let your other friends, those that entered lower, let them have their time in the sun there and make all that cash. Maybe they could give you some money out of the profits. I don't know.
We talked about this idea of basically what is outperforming at the current time and kind of where that ends up putting us in the broader cycle. So when we think about the miners and their performance, are they being outperformed at this time by either of the metals, Pat? Sorry,
The
I should say
miners
Angel
are,
Pat.
it sounds crazy here. It's like I have to look at this. For the miners, The miners rarely do well versus gold, but they are. I'll do Aza. So Aza versus the miners. The miners have been in uptrend versus gold for a little while now. So I don't know. It depends here. Descending line. There's a little base here. So they did well there. But when I zoom out, the miners, they generally are terrible versus gold because. You see the miners just going down and down and down and down versus gold, but they do have these. So we've just had a wave here of the miners doing great with gold, but the issue now is this, guys. There's either it's a flat plane, either it could be a little inclining plane. We're entering the FOMO froth zone because this line here, this descending line, wherever I started there, that is critical, 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 going to be a breakout line, but also critical breakout lines means critical resistance line. And I'm sure Kevin's waiting for me to talk about what's happening here in the bottom chart. And
Just
that.
one thing I always say when you put lines on charts like that, and people who aren't familiar with technical analysis will say, yeah, but you're just drawing a line on a chart. Remember that these lines, these resistance lines that get multiple touches, they're plotted by trading systems all around the world. So hedge fund managers and bullion banks will have technical analysis experts, no doubt. Sort of, if you're looking to buy and enter at a low risk entry point, you need to know where those low risk entry points are. So it's not just us that's doing this. Those resistance lines are actually built out of volume. If you put a volume profile on the chart, you'll find that the volume by price occurs. That's volume by time there, but volume by price occur. Builds out those resistance levels. So you see where you've got that big bar on the right-hand side there, that corresponds with the resistance line that Pat's just drawn, because you're getting a lot of trading at that price level. As the price gets up there, you've got a lot of sell orders in there, a lot of buy orders, a lot of sell orders in that zone. So you get the volume. So the algorithms that trade all this stuff, they know where the volume levels are. So the lines that we're drawing and identifying do genuinely show where buying pressure and selling pressure are focused. And again, it's crossing those thresholds that is the signal that the chart gives you that you can act upon. If you're not aware of where that volume is, and if you're not aware of where those resistance lines are, then you're flying blind and you don't have a roadmap.
That's right. And look, look at this is what I don't like, guys. Here, this crescendo, crazy peak volume here, when the price is stretched from that 36-month moving average, and when you're starting to hit some resistance here. So back in the days here, we probably had some type of resistance here, right there. Look, this is the miner's performance versus gold. Doesn't mean the miner's can't go up on their own charts. This is just when will the miners start stalling versus gold? And people always say the miners, oh, they have so much catch up to do versus gold. Well, be careful, guys, because that's what you think. That's the bullish little angel in you telling you. But you have the other guy who should be also telling you, well, how much of that is already priced in, right? And are there any other macro headwinds that you're not aware of that might stifle your bullish narrative, right? So you got to be really careful there when you have a bullish narrative. Don't lock yourself into behind a curtain there. There could be something else there that you don't know about. And look at this crazy volume here. So crazy volume is in, we'll know with hindsight there how important that was, but crazy volume, distance from moving average, I'm not a fan of that. Look at this, you have crazy volume on breakdowns or sometimes tops, and this volume is just insane. So I'm
Also,
not I'm
looking at something like the gold to copper ratio tells you which sector might next be one
Yes.
to look at, because as gold is topping, taking profits off the table, if that's what you want to do, what do you do with those? Well, if you can identify something that is in a good position to start outperforming gold, then that those sort of sectors are the ones you need to be looking at. So whether it happens to be another one of the sort of precious metals, platinum, palladium, whether it happens to be base metals like copper. You get copper miners, of course, you get platinum miners. So if the gold and silver miners start to underperform these things, then that's what you want to be looking at. So rotating, continually rotating the trading portion of your NAV. Of course, you've got long-term positions in gold and silver that you might want to leave there until gold $10,000, $15,000. and silver is north of $200. That's absolutely fine. But I'm just talking here about the trading portion of your NAV. That's something else you need to be identifying in your mind, is how much of your money you want to be in a long-term position, how much you want to be trading with, because it's the trading portion that you can apply these ratio charts to more frequently than your investment portion. The investment portion, you would probably hold gold and silver until it goes into a bear market versus the S&P. But your trading portion, every time you get a multi-month or even a 2-year correction, you can use your trading portion to trade in and out of the sectors.
Right. You saw that chart there. It's like when something, my Uber driver was not talking to me about copper, or stuff like that, And you saw that chart there, gold, copper is hitting that support line versus gold. So it's getting really like hammered. And then you're wondering, okay, is that where the next move is going to go up? And then you look at the miners, they're in a froth zone versus gold. So like if you look objective the charts, you're seeing the next opportunity. We're not quite there yet. We're gonna have to, wait for actual breakdown stuff. But the next opportunity might not be in the mine. It's like as the miners are hitting their profit targets, we had a whole bunch of miners we on our website there that I don't know how many we added there, but like half of them have reached their targets. Some are still trying to run to reach higher up targets. As that's happening, there's other sectors, the oil plays, the copper plays, they're shaping up. People should have their attention on that there. Because that's probably the next place, the next capital flows of the commodity sector is probably going to go more in the whatever, like copper, oil plays there. That's where people should be focused on more than trying to add into their miners, which are already running hot and are in a severe need of a cool down. And when I, as soon as we say that out loud, people, whoever who just jumped in, they get angry. And I know exactly what people's positions are because they get angry at me. It's like, of course you're all miners there. You don't want to hear this, but what do you want me to tell you? A lot of people do appreciate Kevin and I's objective analysis because it does help them. There's a lot of value in listening to somebody who will tell you the truth no matter what, right? Let's say you have an important decision in your life, Tom. I'm sure there's somebody in your family or friends. Okay, I'm gonna see Mark, I'm gonna see John. He's a straight shooter. He's gonna tell me that's a bad plan, jumping off a kite or something. No, he's going to tell you, and you need these people to have reality checks to balance these echo chambers we're in. Like I know we've talked
I
about.
mean, you can disagree with us, and that's absolutely fine, but it's good to expose yourself to other views and opinions. If you disagree with us, okay, but just bear in mind what we've said and keep that in the back of your mind, because it's not based on unicorns and rainbows. It's based on solid technical weight of evidence, and using these ratio charts, it gives us an insight into the relative performance of one asset versus another. So it might not be something that you're used to considering, technical analysis, but and you may very well disagree with what we say, but just it's something. It's another string to your bow. If you're considering taking positions, then at the very least, just factor it in a little bit.
Yeah, it's just another tool there, another tool to use or use it. Because if you just have the hammer, you're going to want to hit everything with a hammer, right? We always hear that, like a doctor who's a specialist in whatever. I could solve this there. It's a I'll saw you or do something. Well, if he had multiple tools, this doctor or this guy there, he would be able to, he wouldn't have to. He'd be able. He had more chances of using the good tool to view the problem there, the situation.
Well, guys, I always appreciate the objective analysis and maybe gut check for some of these ideas makes us, I think it's always important that it makes us revisit our assumptions here. Of course, you guys are both available on X, Kevin at North Star Charts and Pat at Bad Charts One. And of course, your guys's excellent resource of a website, northstarbadcharts.com. Is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners with to think about before we wrap up today?
I think we've pretty much covered just about everything there. Anything you can think of, Pat?
No, yeah,
Yeah, I mean,
guys,
just
just the next opportunity, guys. There's always an opportunity. So if ever you're feeling FOMO, and I've done it also, Kevin shows me a chart. And there's huge profits or anything, guys. Remember, there's always another opportunity, right? Nobody's putting a trigger to your head that you have to, make gains today. be patient. The beautiful setups, they're morphing into existence as we talk. And Kevin and I cover that regularly on our website and some stuff on Twitter there on X.
Absolutely. Guys, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much,
Bye,
Tom.
Tom.